Seekers. It is I, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, in once again for Mike Malloy, who is out sick. We hope he will be back Monday in fine fettle. So I'm delighted to sit in for him once again, fill in out here at K-Talk AM 1150 in beautiful, sunny downtown Burbank. That's right, coming to you live, broadcasting for the next 3 hours, live from Los Angeles. We will it's Accountability Friday. That's what I've decided. And we're going to take your calls all damn night long on accountability. I want to find out who's accountable, Republicans, Democrats, corporations, the media, yeah, hello, me, you want to hold me accountable? Bring it on. I want to hear from you tonight, all night long, trying to leave a lot of room for phone calls, but we do have some great guests along those lines, the lines of accountability. Starting out momentarily here, we're going to be joined by Glenn Greenwald, the great blogger from Salon.com. He's been holding people accountable. He understands accountability. Why doesn't anybody else? Where the hell is the media? All right. Yeah, we're also going to be joined later on by Greg Palast. Yeah, you've heard of him. Troublemaker and muckraker. He's going to be joining us and holding folks accountable. Desi Doyen, my co-host of the Green News Report, is going to be joining us for the Green News. Plus, we're going to take a whole bunch of your calls, and I'm going to do my best to keep an eye on the various chat rooms over at bradblog.com. Go over there. The first item up for bid is an open thread. Agent 99 is keeping an eye on the chat room for us. I'm going to do my best to keep an eye on it as well. Going to try to keep an eye on the truth seekers over at Democratic Underground. Hey, guys, I'm watching. But since it's getting late in Brazil, where my first guest is tonight, I want to get right to him as quickly as I can. Oh, I forgot to give the number. 877-520-1150. It is not Malloy's regular phone number. If you call him, all you're going to do is wake him up, and he's got the flu, so knock it off. Give us a call at 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Hang on the line all night long. I'll get to everybody. How's that? All right, going to our first guest, Glenn Greenwald, master blogger. I hope that's polite to say. Master blogger and civil rights, former constitutional attorney, civil rights litigator. He is an accountability expert from Salon's daily must-read, Unclaimed Territory. He's also the author of his newest book, His Great American Hypocrites, Toppling the Big Myths of Republican Politics. Oh, and he's got a couple of other New York Times bestsellers, but don't listen to him or me. What do we know? Hey, Glenn Greenwald, great to have you on the Malloy Show. How are you, sir?
Doing great. Great to be here, Brad.
Delighted to have you here. Thanks for staying up late-ish out there in Brazil. Really appreciate it. All right, we're talking about accountability. You're one of the few guys, frankly, in the media, and perhaps even in the progressive media, who is really holding Obama's feet to the fire, holding everyone's feet to the fire. Thank you for doing that. Very quickly, let's get right to it here. There's a new report out today you covered from Human Rights First, finding that convictions of terrorists in the regular U.S. federal courts is excellent. They got a 91%, almost 100% record of convictions in the regular U.S. Court. So the notion that we have to have preventative detention, as Barack Obama has called for, is really unsupported. Is that what the takeaway is from this new report, Glenn?
Absolutely. I mean, I think taking a step back a little bit further, you know, the argument throughout the 8 years of the Bush administration from progressives and Democrats and Bush critics of all types was that we have a perfectly adequate and workable system of justice that has been refined and improved over the course of several hundred years, and that there's no reason to create entirely new institutions or radically change our system of justice in the name of terrorism or the war on terror. That was sort of the overarching critique of the Bush administration, and Barack Obama certainly embraced that in all sorts of ways and claimed that he agreed with that, and yet he's now in the process of introducing almost as many proposals, if not more, than George Bush and Dick Cheney did to undermine our system of justice. And the principal argument is that our federal courts aren't equipped to be able to prosecute terrorism cases consistent with our security. And this new report, as you just said, indicates that it's almost impossible for the government to lose when it accuses people of being terrorists in federal courts.
Okay, now were the cases that they looked at, where they have this excellent conviction rate, were the cases that they looked at prior, were they terrorism cases that happened prior to these torture memos, the John Yoo, Bybee, all of these guys, Rizzo, all of these torture memos? Was it prior to our apparently a new practice of torturing our detainees? So in other words,
they looked at 191 cases that were brought subsequent to the September 11th attack, so essentially during the Bush era. And it shouldn't be surprising, because the idea that the only evidence that we have against some of these detainees is evidence that is obtained by torture is clearly unproven. We have a whole mountains of evidence that we're able to use in order to convict people in federal courts. And, you know, ultimately, if the only evidence that we have against somebody is evidence obtained by torture, then nobody should want to put that person into a cage and imprison them for life based on evidence that, by definition, is unreliable, since it was obtained by torture. If we're confident enough that we think that people should be kept in prison for essentially their entire lives, then it should mean, by definition, that we have evidence other than evidence obtained by torture. And clearly that's the case, which is why the success rate is so high for terrorist suspects accused and convicted during the Bush administration. That's what this report deals with.
Well, exactly. Now, you would think that's the case, and yet Obama came out in a speech at the National Archives that was talked about for all of, I don't know, 7 minutes by the media before they just had to move on to other things, where he set down, I believe it was 5 different ways that they would deal with the Gitmo detainees, and essentially, if they couldn't, if they couldn't release them because they were, you know, clearly innocent, if they couldn't get a conviction in a court of law, they would do what Bush did, which is detain them indefinitely without charges. In other words, as I believe you wrote at the time, they would only bring these guys to trial in cases where they knew they could win. Is that a correct way to characterize it?
Yeah, and that was one of the most ironic speeches ever, because the speech was delivered at the National Archives in front of the original copy of the Constitution, designed to give this, you know, aura of civil liberties to what Obama was saying. And then in the middle of the speech, which has some good aspects to it, he unleashes this proposal of putting people into prison for life with no trial or charges of any kind, about as antithetical to the vision of the founders as it can get. And you know, I mean, if one wants to be generous to the position that Obama is in, it would certainly be politically difficult if we end up having to release people who end up after that engaging in terrorist attacks. But that's happened to the Bush administration. They released hundreds of people, at least a dozen or two dozen of those have, by all accounts, engaged in subsequent efforts against the United States, whether fighting in Afghanistan or Iraq or in other places. That's what it means to have a system of justice, is that the government isn't allowed to imprison every single person it wants to. It's only allowed to imprison those people who it can prove in a court of law, in a real court with due process, have actually done something worthy of incarceration.
Although we should point out that those numbers of the folks that supposedly returned to the battlefield, there's not real good evidence for that. This claim that so many of these, where they 60% have returned to the battlefield and they've fought against the U.S. Evidence is pretty weak.
You're right. The number has been wildly overstated. And in fact, the New York Times ran a front page story about 2 months ago based on an anonymous leak from a Pentagon official claiming that 1 in 7 that had been released had quote unquote returned to jihad. And they ended up having to print a correction because it was completely unfair. found it. And that's why I say, by all accounts, there's at least a dozen, say 12 out of the several hundred, maybe two dozen at the most. And when I say they've engaged in some efforts against the United States, I don't mean they're blowing up civilian buildings. I mean, they might be doing something like fighting in Afghanistan or fighting in Iraq. But the number is very small, much smaller than the Pentagon tried claiming and the New York Times helped them to claim. And my only point is that the Bush administration did end up releasing people who ended up, these are people not released by Obama, but released by Bush, and there wasn't much political repercussions for that. That's just the nature of how our system works. We may put someone on trial who we think is guilty and in a standard criminal justice context, and the jury acquits them, and we don't hold them anyway based on the belief that they may engage in future violent conduct. And sometimes people who are acquitted end up committing crimes, and that's how the system works.
So, and I got to get to a break here in 30 seconds. So you're okay if these are guys who we know did engage in battle, but the evidence has become so tainted because of torture and everything else, you're okay letting those guys free, correct?
Well, I don't actually believe there is a class like that of people that we quote-unquote know are dangerous, and yet we can't convict, because I believe if we know them, we can. But if that's the case, yeah, that's what it means to have a justice system. You let them go.
Fair enough. All right, we're speaking with Glenn Greenwald. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. I want to talk about torture and Chuck Todd. And, boy, try to tell me the difference between the two. You're listening to Brad in for Mike Malloy, speaking with Glenn Greenwald. He'll be back. And then your calls at 877-520-1150 on torture, accountability, and everything else you want to talk about. Stay with us. Did we lose Glenn? Hey, Jez, get Glenn back on the phone. We were playing Brazil for him, after all. We'll see if we can get him back. We had him there. Maybe it was playing Brazil that, no, that didn't. All right. I'll let him know if we get him back. That we, we were talking with Glenn Greenwald of Salon.com, Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. We will try to get him back, if we can. Tony, can you jump out and let Des know we need to get him back on? Because she may not be, paying attention. We are talking about accountability. It is Accountability Friday. And we're loading up the phone lines with your calls at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. It's not Malloy's normal number. It's the number out here in Los Angeles as we're sitting here in Stephanie Miller's studio. And we're talking about accountability, as I said, and this new report out finding that, you know what, the U.S. federal courts work just fine when it comes to terrorism cases. There is no reason to have unlimited detention against these guys down there in Gitmo. And as usual, the Democrats have fallen for it, have taken the bait. They're frightened. They don't want to close Gitmo. They want to continue violating the Constitution. Barack Obama, of all people, wants to continue violating the Constitution. And I had hoped to get to torture and talk about torture with Glenn Greenwald and about the media and the way that the media, incredibly enough, Glenn had a report last week. He highlighted something that we had also highlighted concerning concerning Chuck Todd and the way the cable, not just cable media, but all of the news media was dealing with this, these torture investigations that are rumored to be launched by Eric Holder shortly and incredibly narrowly, I might add. Let me jump in. I think we got Glenn back. Not Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck. Hey, Glenn. I don't know why we lost you there. My apologies if it was my fault. Two quick questions, because I know it's late and you got to go. But Chuck Todd, his cable news catnip comment that torture investigations would be politicized, outrageous that he would, it seems to me, that he's making the case that we can't hold anybody accountable because Republicans would politicize them, therefore let's not have it at all. How do you hold anybody accountable under the Chuck Todd standard at that rate?
Well, you don't. Presidents are, and their top officials are immunized from the rule of law. But of course, you mean what I thought was interesting about what Chuck Todd said was that I've been saying for a long time that most establishment journalists literally don't believe that the rule of law ought to apply to high-ranking Washington officials, especially in the executive branch. And there's lots of reasons for that. But it seems pretty clear that that's true. And Chuck Todd made that case so explicitly when he was on Morning Joe and in his subsequent interview with me, in which he was essentially saying that the prospect of holding people accountable who are high up in government when they've committed crimes, when they've committed acts that the law describes as felonies and imposes very harsh prison terms for, is nothing but a politicized act, as you said. He called it cable catnip. And I think going back to Richard Nixon and the Iran-Contra scandal, and certainly through the years of the Bush administration, and all kinds of crimes have been committed, you very much see this this idea among the political and media elite that the rule of law, prosecutions, courtrooms, crimes, prisons are for the ordinary Americans who sell drugs on the street corner, but not for high-ranking political officials who commit crimes and break the law, and that's why they continue to do it, because there's no consequences for it.
That's right, and of course it's going to be politicized, particularly now, since Chuck Todd has announced that all you have to do is make political hay about any particular investigation, and oh, it won't be done. I leave it to you. I know you got to go. We got some lines filling up. You're not able to stick around and take calls, correct?
I can take a few calls.
Okay, well, we'll take a few calls after this break. Then I'm going to hold this question for you about a writ of mandamus after the break. Sit tight there. Don't hang up on us this time, and we won't hang up on you. Glenn Greenwald, just a few more minutes here with him. Brad, in for Malloy. Going to ask if a writ of mandamus can be brought to force the Department of Justice to follow the law. Wouldn't that be neat? Brad, in for Malloy. Stick with us back after this. Friedman of Bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. Speaking with Glenn Greenwald, the great blogger, constitutional law attorney from Salon.com. Delighted he could stick with us for a few more minutes here. He is, after all, in Brazil, preparing to scoop me on every story possible since he's 4 hours ahead of me. Okay, let me get him back on. There we go. Now I got him. Glenn, we'll get a quick call, and folks who want to call in, happy to take your questions, your thoughts on accountability, 877-520-1150. If you hear anything you disagree with tonight, let me hear from you. That includes right-wingers. Would love to hear from the wingnuts out there. You think we're crazy? Bring it on. Love to hear from you. All right, Glenn Greenwald. On this torture thing, it was leaked a week or so ago that Holder is considering naming a special prosecutor to look into torture. Incredibly enough, the follow-up reports say that he's going to look at the only those rogue CIA employees, those interrogators who went beyond the John Yoo torture memos, which in and of themselves, it seems to me, are illegal. So it's somewhat ironic that he's calling for, just people who didn't obey those ridiculous torture memos from John Yoo. But my larger question beyond that is, torture is illegal. These guys need to prosecute. I would argue John Yoo and Bybee and Rizzo and all these guys broke the law in their memos. Is there a way, can a writ of mandamus be brought to force the Justice Department to follow the law, to bring investigate and prosecute where appropriate on torture, no matter who it is who did the torturing?
It's an interesting question. Ultimately, those writs are really designed to compel public officials to perform a function which is considered to be mandatory or ministerial or for which there's no discretion. And in general, prosecutors have considerable discretion when deciding whether or not they intend to indict somebody who's accused of breaking the law, or even whether or not to devote lots of investigative resources to investigating the crime. Some prosecutors don't investigate crimes they consider unimportant, like prostitution or petty drug offenses. Here, obviously, it is an extremely grave offense that these individuals are accused of having committed. And so I think, there's a better argument to make that there's less discretion here. But ultimately, prosecutors do retain discretion. I think those of us who are demanding accountability are essentially demanding that whatever decisions get made about whether to prosecute should be purely legal decisions,
right,
of the kind that are apply to ordinary Americans in every other case, and not as a broad policy, a political decision announced in advance that prosecutors won't even look at this because we want to look forward and not backwards or whatever the cliches are. I think that's really the issue, is to demand, like happened in the Louis Libby trial. Ultimately, Karl Rove wasn't indicted, but at least there was a prosecutor seriously considering doing it and who ultimately decided not to do so because he thought he couldn't win. That's at least a legitimate factor that typically is applied to other people, and I think that's the point, is these individuals who are accused of violating our torture laws ought to be treated like all other individuals accused of committing crimes.
And I should add, following the rule of law used to be a conservative principle, so it drives me a little bit nuts when I hear people referring to those who are against torture, and I'm talking about the folks on the Republican side, as conservatives. They're not. If they were conservative, they would be calling for prosecution for torture, because it's very clear that it's illegal, that our treaties require it. I believe the Constitution requires that we follow our treaties. Do you think a writ would stand up, applying for a writ of mandamus to force them to do this? Would that stand up in a court of law?
Like I said, I think it would be difficult to compel indictments, but there may be a better argument to make that at the very least the Justice Department has the obligation to investigate rather than doing what most people have been suggesting they do, and reports even suggest Eric Holder is doing, which is deciding in advance that other than some low-level CIA interrogators who, as you said, transgress the limits of John Yoo's torture permission guidelines, that they won't even be investigated at all. I don't know if a writ would succeed, but at least there's a more compelling argument to make.
Fair enough. Let me get one call in here, and I will I'll let you go. Robert calling from North Hollywood. Welcome to the Molloy Show, Robert. You got a question for Glenn Greenwald.
Well, yeah, a question and a comment, too. It's incredulous to me that a so-called professor of the Constitution, which is Barack Obama, could propose such a ludicrous idea of holding people indefinitely. There's no foundation in the Constitution at all for that. So I just don't understand how he could even propose such an idea. The writ of mandamus, if that's what you're talking about, can we pursue that in regards to not only to the torture issue, but in regards to not exploring or reopening the case of 9/11 as well?
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Robert. Your thoughts on that? Can a writ be pursued for anything like that one feels the law is not being followed?
Yeah, I think, let me just give the little history of the writ very briefly, which is the idea of the writ would be if there is someone who has a particular duty under the law that there's no discretion for. So, for example, if somebody wins an election and there's a Secretary of State under the law who is required to certify the winner of the election as the winner, and they simply refuse to do it, there's no discretion there. The winner of the election is entitled to be certified as such. Then a writ of mandamus is something that courts will generally use to force the public official to do what they unquestionably are required to do. So when it comes to things like investigating various disputes or controversies or even prosecuting people, if there's some discretion there, that may not be the best instrument, but I think it is important to start thinking creatively about how to force public officials to apply the rule of law. And there may be arguments, as you said, the Constitution says treaties are the supreme law of the land. Mm-hmm. There's no discretion to treat people equally before the law. And I think an argument like that is getting closer to the type of concern that the writ was created to address.
And there seems to be no real discretion in the UN treaty that Ronald Reagan signed that said torture is abhorrent and that says that we will either prosecute or extradite. Either one would work. We don't seem to be doing either in this country, Glenn. Thanks for all you do over there at Salon. I promise I let you go. Sorry I kept you a little bit longer. Keep up the good work. Keep holding the media's feet to the fire, because I think when all is said and done, it comes down to the media and these chuckleheads, frankly, inside the Beltway who, I'm sorry, just don't get it. It seems to me.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Thanks, Glenn. Keep holding their feet to the fire, doing the great work that you do. Glenn Greenwald, the blogger and at Salon.com of Unclaimed Territory, author of Great American Hypocrites, Toppling the Big Myths of Republican Politics. You can get a link to it over at BradBlog.com, of course. And there we go. I got him out. You know, he is one of the few guys, we've seen a lot of folks on the progressive side who have not been holding the feet to the fire, who have not been holding Holder's feet, Obama's feet. They would rather talk about all kinds of, Chuck Todd called it cable catnip, and then he goes out and talks about news catnip. I call it media chum. They would rather talk about all kinds of sense and nonsense. I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about accountability, the rule of law. Yeah, maybe this is the ninth year of the Bush administration, but 9 years is too many. And I don't want to have a 10th year, an 11th, and a 12th. So I'm going to end this damn Bush administration, come hell or high water, and hold someone accountable. You want to talk about accountability? It's Accountability Friday, 877-520-1150. Greg Palast is going to be coming up at the top of the hour. So if you got questions for him, bring them on. And as I said, anyone out there who is disagreeing with me, bring it on. Now, you might disagree with me because you're a wingnut, and you think torture is just fine, and George Bush kept us safe. Yeah, right. You may disagree with me because you're a party Democrat, and you don't want to see anybody coming down on poor Barack Obama, because after all, we have to look forward, not back. Oh, by the way, and I'm going to get to your calls here in a second. You can call us 877-520-1150. Little confession here. Yesterday, I did a huge drug deal right after I robbed a bank. That's how I had all the money. Then I went out and raped a goat. And what else did I do? What else do I want to confess? Anyway, I can go on and on about all these. I did some carjacking. I jacked a few cars. Anyway, that was all yesterday. So I don't mind admitting to that on the air here, because as you know, our Justice Department now has a new standard for applying the law. We are looking forward, not back. So they won't look back at my drug dealing, bank robbing, carjacking, raping crime spree that I pulled off yesterday, because it was yesterday. Looking forward, not back. Are you kidding me? All right, let's go to Larry in Phoenix. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's up?
Thank you. Maybe they could arrest you today for what you might do tomorrow.
There you go. The Ministry of Pre-Crime.
I just wanted to call and say I think Obama might be making the right decisions, as long as he's not actually torturing people. I'm not just a former Democrat, but I'm literally a socialist. I swear to God. But
but why is Obama making the right decision, Larry?
Because if I was locked up and tortured all this time, and then people just put me out on the street, I'd be crazy enough to go out and start attacking people one way or another.
So two wrongs.
I would be crazy, but
But
so, Larry, two wrongs do make a right, as far as you're concerned. We were wrong.
It's just a reality. You can't let the violence go on, because violence begets more violence. And I know it's not right to keep somebody locked up, but you might think of it as a cooling down period or something.
A cooling down period? But Larry, it's not in the Constitution.
Things different from what Bush did, too. Bush, those guys, they arrested the guy's families, would bring them in to torture him. We got to take care of the guy's families while he's locked up, if there's any families left.
Well, yeah, and what if we didn't? We should keep him locked up because we tortured his family, therefore don't let him out because he might be mad about it. Is that right, Larry?
It's a terrible quandary that I've worried about for a long time. It's where they've put us down in the well, and it's hard to climb up.
Well, let's climb up. Let's start doing the right thing. Let's start following the rule of law and the Constitution. Larry, I got to move on.
If we get rid of these Bush people who literally been running a military dictatorship for decades, back before Reagan, I mean, the people that the Bush family even worked for way back then.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of bad people. Thanks for the call, Larry. There's a lot of bad people out there, and your thinking, Larry, we might as well just keep everybody in jail who we've ever mistreated, because God forbid they should be mad at us. All right, let me go I got to go to a break, don't I? All right, we're going to go to a break. Taking your calls. Phone lines are filling up. I'll try to get to as many as I can. 877-520-1150. Brad in for Malloy. More after this. Palace at the top of the hour. Mike Malloy, am I on? I can't hear myself. Oh, I can? All right, there we go. Ah, that's much better. All right. Talking about accountability today. Who are we holding accountable? I've had it. Had it with the Republicans, had it with the Democrats, had it with the media. And some of you have had it with me, which is fine by me. Bring it on. Love to talk about it. Let's go to Greg Palace coming up after next hour. Oh, introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox. Got to do that. All-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. That's based on GM compact crossover segment. Excludes other GM vehicles. Go get yourself one. If you're tired of everything like I am, go get one and hit the road. Let's talk to Lawrence in St. Paul, Minnesota. Oh, that's, Lawrence. Welcome to the Malloy Show. What's up?
Hey, quick question, because you talked about constitutional requirement for treaties, and you know, I read it enough. I'm not an expert at it, but you know, I would challenge you on your assertion about adhering to treaties being built in the Constitution. You'd have to quote me on that before I could buy off on that one. But
all right, let me give it to you. Let me quote it to you. Article 6. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made, under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. Any questions, sir?
No, I'll look at it when I get down here further.
Okay.
But I got a question for you.
Yeah, quick.
When you talk about crime, would you go back to the Roosevelt administration and hold them accountable for throwing Japanese Americans in concentration camps? I'm not trying to be funny, but I'm
that's
serious.
All right. No, was it against the law?
Was it against the law? It's always against the law to throw citizens in jail without due process.
Then if there's someone to be held accountable, hold them accountable. Why not? We still got, but the problem is, Lawrence, we still have people in jail today under illegal premises who have been tortured, who have been beaten, who have been killed. Obviously, they're not in jail, but, you know, murder is still a crime in this country, Lawrence.
But have the people in Guantanamo, I don't know if they have or have not been tortured. Now, whether or not you want to say the incarceration is against the law, that may be true.
Well, we know they've been tortured. We know they've been tortured. Well, because for one, the memos from the Bush administration gave them permission to torture.
Was that Guantanamo, or was that over at the Abu Ghraib?
They did it. Oh, they did it all over the country. We had black sites all over the world, secret prisons where these guys were tortured, where these guys were waterboarded. Haven't you paid attention to the news, Lawrence?
Oh gosh, I probably read more news in a day than you probably do.
Apparently not. Nor have you read the Constitution, Article 6. I got to move on, get some other callers. But thanks for calling in, Lawrence. I'm always happy to hear from people who disagree with me. Let's go out to. Robin in Washington State. Robin, welcome to the Molloy Show. What's up?
My God, I wish these morons would be able to rub two brain cells together and have an IQ that's higher than three times their age.
Well,
no torture. What was it, Larry, that said we can't release them into the streets because they're going to try to kill us? You idiot! If it says Fox, ignore it. If it says CNN, ignore it. If it says MSNBC, watch it with a jaundiced eye.
Yeah, but Robin, in this case, it was...
We're not going to release them into our streets. We're going to send them back to their home country.
Robin, it was the Democrats and Harry Reid who said we don't want to move these prisoners from Gitmo because they're going to run free, they're going to escape like the movie Con Air and run rampant in our streets. Not going to happen.
If we bring them into this country, we'll put them into jail cells. But the other guy was talking about if we release them. Okay, if we release them, we're not going to release them into our country, you moron.
All right, thanks for that call, sir.
Their own country.
Yes, sir.
Brad, you're doing a fantastic job, and thank you for getting off of that crap storm of the story that everyone else is talking about today.
We're not interested in the crap storm. Thank you, Robin. I appreciate
Take
it.
Care.
All right. Let's see. Very quickly, we got only a minute here. Let's go to Mike in Long Beach. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, good evening, Brad.
Yeah.
Welcome to the radio on my radio anyway.
Good to be on your radio, sir.
We need a special prosecutor. Everything the Bush administration touched is tainted with dirt.
Yep.
From starting a war with false pretenses to this thing you're talking about, Gitmo and the terror, so-called terrorists and the...
Yep.
All of that.
We do, and I got to get...
We're doctoring the air quality management report, and people are dying now because they went out in so-called clean air, and, it was false.
Yeah, let's have some accountability. That's what Accountability Friday is for. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. We do have some breaking news of a sort from AP a few hours ago. The chairman of the House Judiciary Committee on Friday urged Attorney General Eric Holder to appoint a special counsel to examine potential abuses, by former President George W. Bush's administration. John Conyers said in a speech at the National Press Club that Holder, quote, must appoint a special counsel to review the Bush administration abuses of power and misconduct. A criminal probe, he's got to do that, said Conyers. Yeah, I agree. By the way, you're the chair of the Judiciary Committee. Let's have some more hearings there. Brad in for Molloy. Pallast joins me after the top of the hour. Friendly citizen, investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, drafted into duty on the Mike Molloy program. Mike is out sick, and we hope that he will be back in fine fettle on Monday. So it's me, Brad of Bradblog, broadcasting for the next couple of hours live, from Los Angeles, K-Talk AM 1150 studios. We're taking your calls and we're talking accountability on Accountability Friday. That's what I've decided today is. Somebody's going to be held accountable here before the night is over. If Eric Holder won't do it, if Barack Obama won't do it, you people use your airwaves. These are them. You own them. Hold someone accountable. Who you want to hold accountable? Obama, Bush, Brad Friedman? Feel free. Hold me accountable. I will take it. 877-520-1150 is our number. Speaking of troublemakers and muckrakers, my next guest has been doing exactly that, troublemaking and muckraking, for quite some time over at the BBC and elsewhere. Greg Pallas joins me. He's a investigative BBC journalist, author of Armed Madhouse, from, let me give the full title here, Armed Madhouse, From Baghdad to New Orleans, Sordid Secrets and Strange Tales of a White House Gone Wild. He's also the star of the new documentary video, Greg Pallast Investigates, which you can get at gregpallast.com/bradblog, if you like. Hey, my old friend. Oh, and I should say, I do appear, if you listen carefully, on the audio version of Armed Madhouse, playing a few characters here and there. So, by way of full disclosure, there you have it. Hey, Greg, welcome to the Mike Malloy Program.
Thrilled to be with you. Sorry that Mike's out, you know, anthrax, I suppose, something like that.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's his excuse tonight.
I know, they finally got to him. Yeah, that's got to be it. All right, well, you heard what I said. It's accountability Friday, Greg. Who shall we hold accountable first and for what? Because clearly there's plenty to go around right now.
Well, I want to pick on two.
All right.
and the sling between them. One is the President of the United States, who began his...
George W. Bush?
George W. Bush Jr. Sometimes.
Okay. All right.
I love Barack, but he began his statement about health care by saying, you know, we were losing 700,000 jobs a month. Correction, Mr. President. We are losing 700,000 jobs a month. 750,000 jobs are going down the toilet right now. And I know he wants to change the subject to anything at all, health care, which ain't going to happen, anything. But we're losing. We're losing big time. And that brings me to, who do we blame? Who do we hold accountable?
All right, okay. before you get to the hold accountable, let me ask you this. The Dow is over 9,000 again. So doesn't that mean, and unemployment, while it's still huge, it's less huge than it was before. Doesn't that mean the economy is improving and everything is all right?
Well, actually, it's not less huge than before. Listen to the kind of a ledger domain that they use, the magic with numbers. And for those who don't know Greg Pallas, actually, before I was an investigative reporter, I had a real job. I was an economist, okay? And I got to tell you, what they're telling you is that the rate of increase in unemployment is slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
We are about to leap over the magic 10% mark, which by any intelligent definition makes this an official depression, okay?
Is that the definition,
like,
by the way?
There are those who require that we go all the way to 25% unemployment, but 10% will do it for me. How
all
about
right.
the ungrate depression? Would that be sufficient?
If
we
have
the great depression at 25%, 10% will be the ungrate depression. Who is to blame, Mr. Diamond?
Mr. Diamond, who's that?
And I want to pick out Diamond are not my best friend. Jamie Dimon is the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, the bank that's named after a pirate or a bottle of rum, depending on how you want to break it out.
Uh-huh.
J.P. Morgan. Now, J.P. Morgan, like Goldman Sachs, was one of the TARP babies that got tens of billions of dollars from the U.S. government. But they also got money in indirect ways from the FDIC and other methods. I know, like Goldman, which made a big deal of turning over its TARP money from the government, Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
It also got more. It got more than its TARP money through the bailout of AIG Insurance. They got $15 billion from the bailout of AIG. It was basically a money laundering operation. Why were we bailing out bankers who were making bets on derivative gambling. It was like they took out insurance to go to Vegas. It was the most unbelievable thing. And believe it or not, an insurance company that says, we don't care how you gamble. If you win, it's okay. If you lose, we'll pay you off. You know what? That insurance company is going to go out of business. And somehow we've been told that if we let them go out of business, that the
whole economy collapses.
You know, Chicken Little said that the economy will collapse. Well,
no?
Guess what? We saved them, and you know what? The economy has collapsed. And indeed, the sky did fall. Unfortunately, it didn't fall on the banks like Morgan and Goldman, et cetera.
So to be clear, the better plan, Greg Pallas, would have been let these guys go under, and instead of bailing them out, bail the people who had money in their operations out. Is that
roughly that? In other words, we had there was some blonde who ran for president. What was her name? Anyway, Clinton had said what we need is something that FDR had tried out. And by the way, even John McCain for a couple hours backed the idea of a federal home loan bank. We have a disaster which was created by predatory mortgage lending. Now, and by the way, if you want, the reason I'm picking on Jamie Dimon.
That's what I was going to ask. What did Jamie Dimon? You named Jamie Dimon. What did he do?
He is supposedly, at least from his statement, supposedly Obama has called him his favorite banker. Well, he's not my favorite banker because he's also runs one of the probably the second largest subprime operation out there called Washington Mutual, which they took over, J.P. Morgan Chase.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the deal. These guys became commercial banks overnight. That meant that they got insurance from us. But you know, when you are a commercial bank, you're supposed to do something else. You are required by law, for example, to invest in the community. It's called the Community Reinvestment Act.
Right.
Well, what is Goldman's community? Where's J.P. Morgan Chase's community that they've been helping out? That's required by law. Other banks have put in literally hundreds of billions of dollars over the years under these laws. These guys have gotten the gold mine from us, and we've gotten the shaft.
But you're saying the investment bankers, the investment bankers did not have to participate in the Community Reinvestment Act?
They're no longer investment bankers. You know, we sprayed some apparently some type of Federal Reserve holy water on Goldman Sachs and turned this financial casino into a commercial bank. Where's their ATM? You know,
yep.
If they're a commercial bank, they are required to lend money into the community. But instead, what they've been doing is bleeding it dry. So now, what would have been this? What were the solutions? What are the solutions? We go back. How about helping out their victims instead of the victimizers? And actually, in the film, one of the things in this film, Palace Investigates, which is called From 8 Mile to the Amazon, and I do my investigation. These are investigations I did for BBC television. In other words, I'm allowed to do investigative reporting in Britain. Mm-hmm. It's illegal under Patriot Act 3 in the U.S. or something. But it's... And one of the things besides, you know, hunting down oil companies in the Amazon, I went to 8 Mile, where I met a guy, Robert Pratt, who was losing his home to foreclosure. Five kids. He used to have six, but one was shot in the backyard by a stray bullet. You know, it's a wonderful neighborhood. He was given a so-called subprime mortgage. Now, in the old days, subprime mortgages were called loan sharking or predatory mortgages. They were illegal. What is a subprime mortgage? It's not about, I don't care what Fox TV says, these are losers, people who couldn't afford their mortgages. Robert Pratt is a UAW member. He was earning a union wage and working overtime 7 days a week. He is not a subprime. There are no subprime borrowers, mm-hmm. as one credit union manager says to me. The credit unions, by the way, whom you should support, do not give out subprime loans. They give out loans, okay?
Right.
A subprime loan does not mean that the person is subprime. The subprime loan means that there is that you pay an extra percentage interest rate, but you don't know it. Subprime means that you will get the prime rate plus an additional sum in later years. These are called exploding interest clauses. So Robert Pratt, for example, was paying about $700 a month on his mortgage on his home in 8 Mile, like a $100,000 mortgage. 3 years later, he's paying $1,100. Now it's rising to $1,500. That's more than half his take-home pay. He can't do it. In other words,
all
it's not
no
true
fault.
That people...
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, it's not true that people couldn't pay these mortgages. Oh, they couldn't afford. Yeah, they could. If you didn't suddenly jack up the rate 4 years later, and when they're asked, well, what is this thing about the rates rising? Because it's a really complex language in page 42 in the middle of the document. They said, don't worry about that. We'll refinance your mortgage later. And that, and by the way, they did that a lot, and they would charge massive, massive fees to roll over the mortgage into a new one. And what's happening in the meantime is that these fees are being added into the mortgage so that...
Hold the thought, Greg. I got to get to a break. And, and I hate to, reopen that can of worms, but it's still open. No one's been held accountable, and none of those banks were required under the Community Reinvestment Act to give a loan to anybody who couldn't afford it. That's BS. And so when you hear that on Fox News. So talking to Greg Palance, going to take some of your calls coming up, 877-520-1150. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Stick with us. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. That's all right, Tony. It happens. Blame me. Why not? It's Accountability Friday. I'll take accountability for that. Brad Friedman talking with Greg Palast here. Get more information on Greg at gregpalast.com. Get his new documentary, Greg Palast Investigates, at gregpalast.com/bradblog. And it'll help me out, too. Why not? All right, so we're talking about accountability. We're talking about the banks, the problem that still has not been fixed. Yes, even though the Dow is over 9,000, everything's fine, right? No, people are still losing their homes. They're still getting tossed out. The bankers are getting rich again, and no one is holding them accountable. Greg was talking about Jamie Dimon, Barack Obama's favorite banker. As a matter of fact, Greg, who we were talking earlier this afternoon, that you compared Barack Obama and the bankers to who?
I don't remember.
Oh, well, you said that the banks were Barack Obama's oil compared to George Bush.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Thank you for reminding me.
You were drunk at the time, I understand.
I should be. What that means is that... there they were.
They're coming to get me.
So, you have to understand is that Barack Obama probably raised five times as much from the finance community as McCain did. Why are they so comfortable with this guy? And as it turns out, for the Democratic Party, for Barack Obama, the banks are what oil was to Bush in terms of the big money coming in. Now, Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan shifted his funds from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party, of course, seeing which way the wind was blowing.
Right.
But it's paid off big time. In fact, at their board meeting, it's quite amazing, is that the special guest of honor at their board meeting, which is closed to the public, will be Rahm Emanuel.
Oh,
now,
man.
Even Timmy Geithner, he got the first invitation and turned it down as an obvious conflict of interest.
Right.
And Geithner, you practically have to hit him with a subway train to notice a conflict of interest. So when Geithner says it's a conflict of interest, and then Rahm Emanuel runs into it, the so-called chief of staff, do I smell conflict here? Holy cow. So... But what are they getting in return? My big problem is we talked about Robert Pratt, the guy who's losing his home. He has not gotten a call from Rahm Emanuel to come to his house, and he hasn't been invited to J.P. Morgan's board meeting. I'm very concerned. In fact, he's got – now, I talked about Pratt as a victim of these guys. What about General Motors? Okay, here's a victim for you. When they were put through the bankruptcy ringer, everyone got machine gunned.
Right.
Their stockholders, various bondholders, and most important, their workers and retirees lost all of their health benefits and took GM stock in return. Would you like GM? Hey, listen, if you need a pancreas tomorrow, I don't think the doctor is going to take 50 shares of a busted company stock. You know, good cars, but you know, busted company. Now, the but. J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs had loans outstanding to General Motors. They got every penny back, $10 billion out of a company which needed every single nickel to stay alive and keep the economy alive. I know people beat up General Motors, but every car company was hurting there. They were killed by high interest rates. They were killed by these very same banks which cranked it up on them.
They acted like loan sharks, and they
got $100 billion. And they got it back in cash. Now, in a bankruptcy like that, no one gets their money back. But this was engineered by Stevie Ratner, working at the behest of the Obama administration. And then after Ratner, Stevie the Rat, arranged for the $10 billion to take out of General Motors' hide, then he resigns because he may be facing indictment for bribery in New York.
Greg, what's good for J.P. Morgan is good for the USA. We're going to take a quick break here. Come back. You can stick around and take a call or two before you go, Greg?
I have to.
All right, brother. Hang on,
Jamie,
Jeff.
You want to call? What's the number for Jamie?
We're calling Jamie Dimon?
He's got to call in, right?
Let's get him.
Remember, he should call.
Let's get him. Oh, and I just lost Jeff. I was going to talk to him in Orange County. All right, hang on. Greg Palast, Brad in for Malloy. Stick with us. For Mike Malloy, speaking with Greg Palast, author of Armed Madhouse, From Baghdad to New Orleans, Sordid Secrets and Strange Tales of a White House Gone Wild. And I'm pretty sure he was talking about the Bush-Cheney White House, but now we've got another White House that's gone wild. And since it's Accountability Friday, we're calling them all out. And we're talking about the bankers getting away with murder here. Jamie Dimon, president of J.P. Morgan. Greg, you want to take a couple quick calls here?
Love to.
All right, brother. I got to learn how this system works. Steve in Burbank, welcome to the show.
Yeah, how you doing? How you doing there, Brad?
Doing all right.
Greg?
Oh, I can see you waving out the window there in Burbank.
Well, you know, this would be a much better call if I'm not drinking beer on an empty stomach.
Oh, great.
But, you know, well, Greg's he's guilty, too. He just admitted it.
That's true. How can we help you, Steve?
Well, it was fun to hear him say, you know, cash in GM stock to get a pancreas operation, and I thought, well, take a hacksaw to a bar of gold, you know, and go to the supermarket. Same difference. What I wanted to ask Greg, not putting him on the spot, is if he's ever heard of this Richard Wolff guy from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst.
Yes.
Oh, goody, you have. And you, and another dumb thing. Do you know Adam Curtis personally? You know, it's like, hey, my brother's in the army, so you see a guy on the street.
I don't know any of these people. What's the question? What's the question you got for Greg?
To Greg about economics. And
okay, so talk to me.
Bring it on.
Okay. Well, I did not see Zeitgeist. Did you see Zeitgeist? I just want to ask you a question about Zeitgeist.
No, missed that one, but go ahead.
Is that it? Come on, Steve.
Okay. Well,
come on, baby.
Well, what we have happening here is through history and through economics we study, we see that there are terms called commodities capital, and then there is financial capital. And then the other day on the radio, I heard another university professor talking about phantom wealth and real wealth. And then I heard another clown talker on the radio time after time saying concrete money,
okay,
abstract
Steve,
money.
Put that in the form of a question.
What I'm trying to say is this.
Okay.
we are being manipulated by the money people. They're using money to control the population large, the whole earth.
All right.
And we're falling for it because, you know, we believe it. We believe that money is wealth. Money is not wealth. Money is nothing more than an IOU.
Thanks, Steve. I got to go, brother.
Okay,
nurse that beard, no problem. Let me get to, actually, unless you got a comment on that, Greg.
Well, actually, I do have a comment.
Go for it.
There was something in there between the suds, okay, which was that about money making money. You see, we used to make money in America by making things. Like cars, right? And now we make money by money. In fact, I was just looking. In fact, my research associate was saying, this number can't be right. I said, it really is. J.P. Morgan controls right now $81 trillion in derivatives. $81 trillion in derivatives. This was a product like an automobile. It doesn't have wheels. You can't drive it. You can't eat it. You know, but we are stuck with it. $81 trillion, and now that J.P. Morgan has been blessed and made a commercial bank, we're responsible for it, and we don't even know what it is, except there's $81 trillion of this stuff. $81 trillion
in derivatives. And the derivative market collapsed, but it didn't go away, did it? It's still there.
It didn't go away, and we didn't... Who called for this thing? America was built without 12 cents of derivatives, and now we got $81 trillion in a single bank. That means if they've made a 1% error, we're nearly $1 trillion in the hole, the U.S. Treasury, because we've just backed up these guys by making them part of our official banking system. This is out of control. What we've done is we have now decided to insure these are basically financial casinos. They are not banks. And in a way, this is what Steve was talking about, which is that we are now in the business of money making money as opposed to making things to make money. That is very dangerous for the economy because it cuts out people called American workers. This could lead, if we don't stop this stuff, we don't have a temporary depression. This may not be secular. What we may have is a permanent decline in the U.S. economy.
How does this stop, Greg Palast? How do you say we have to change? What do we need to do? What does Barack Obama or Congress need to jump in and do?
One, close the casinos. We shouldn't be guaranteeing casino operations. You hit it on the head, Brad. We should be giving money not to the banks which gave out predatory mortgages. We still have 6 million people facing foreclosure, which means something like 79 million families facing devaluation of homes, near foreclosed homes. So what we need to do is take over the mortgages, nationalize mortgages, as we did under FDR, set up a federal home loan bank, and give these people back their mortgages without the crazy predatory loan sharky interest.
Well, but haven't we already
paid that off?
But haven't we already done the TARP? They think everything's fine. How could this possibly come about where we start realizing, oh, we have to start giving the money to the people? They've already got this phony socialism thing going. How could this come about? It seems to me like it's going to have to get a hell of a lot worse before we even get close to actually doing the right thing here.
Well, what we need to do is begin foreclosing on the politicians, because how could it get much? Well, it could get much worse, but we are not. We have the same number of people facing foreclosure as we did last year. The idea that just because the market's above 9,000, when we have mortgage foreclosures, home foreclosures above 6 million, that's the number we should be looking at. That cannot stand. We cannot recover with that type of weight around our neck. California, we don't need an earthquake. California is sinking to the ocean financially under the weight of foreclosed homes. We need to stop that stuff. We need to keep people. It does not help us. It does not help us if the bankers are subsidized literally to put people out of their homes.
Let me get to...
We need to get the money into the people's hands to keep them in their homes. Most people can pay off their mortgages if the mortgage interest rates are not cranked up.
But I think
it's that simple.
I think it's going to have to get so much worse before that happens, so that we have a mandate from the people that the liars, the Fox News liars and the right-wing liars, you know, can't go in there and say, it's socialism. He's trying to take over the country. I don't think actually Barack, even if it does get that bad, I don't think Barack Obama can fix it in that it will be held up. They would rather see this ship go down entirely than do the right thing for these people. Let me take one more call for you, Greg, before I let you go. Jim in, Jim, our old buddy Jim Sorrell in Los Angeles. Jim guest blogs for us from time to time at Brad Blog. What's up, Jim?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Doing great.
It was wonderful to talk to you both, two of my favorite smartest people. I have a question for either or both of you, and it sort of ties into what you're talking about. Barack Obama, a lot of hot air coming from him, in my opinion, but no transparency, even though he says transparency, no accountability, even though he talks a lot about accountability, just a lot of BS from what I'm seeing, and yet people who should know better, really smart folks like Randy Rhodes, Stephanie Miller, the ground this guy walks on, and all I can see is Bush 2. What do you guys think? Am I crazy out here? What's going on?
Well, you may be crazy, but that's not the question you're asking. Good to hear from you, Jim. Let's bat that one around. Take care, Jim. Greg, what do you think?
Look,
is he Bush 2?
Compared to what went before, Mount Rushmore material, you know, because remember that Bush, when the mortgage market was collapsing, banks were collapsing, said he wasn't going to have any program to save the economy unless Congress approved the CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Act. Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
So that Obama, he may be flying around and unfortunately hanging around too much with Pirate Morgan Diamond, but nevertheless, he is actually trying to do something. He is hobbled by blue dogs, female dogs in Congress, and I don't mean to make that sexist, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got, you know, the worst thing in the world is something called moderate Republicans like Olympia Snow that took money out of the stimulus plan. What we do need, though, however, is we should immediately put Geithner and Summers on roller skates and get rid of them right away, because they gave the money to the banks, and now they're saying maybe we ought to get something in return. They should have asked for something in return before they wrote the $1 trillion in checks. I mean, well more than $1 trillion in subsidy has gone to these guys. Around $4 trillion has gone into these banks in guarantees and subsidies. They should have said, before you get that, you will place a moratorium on foreclosures. You will not increase interest rates on any outstanding mortgage at this time. You will not. And that's all we needed to do.
There's a lot that he needed to do, and while it's easy to blame the blue dogs and the right-wingers and everything else, Barack Obama has a lot of political capital. He is not cashing it in. He has not showed up to say, we need to change this system from top to bottom. You voted for change. I'm here to bring you that change. He's really not. He's working around the margins. Yes, the energy package, the health care reform, these will be sea changes, frankly. They're not going to be very good bills, I suspect, by the time they're signed, but they're changes in the structure that we have here in this country when we're dealing with both energy and we're dealing with health care. Even though they will need to be fixed and made better in the future. He's not doing that for the banks. He's not doing that for the economy, as far as I can tell. So, he ain't George Bush. I'll grant you that. George Bush was evil. Barack Obama is a Democrat. That's a big difference. But he needs to do a lot more.
Yeah, that's the problem. Again, you know, compared to what happened, I mean, we've just been smacked in the face over and over again. So now we got a guy who's standing with his hands in his pockets and whistling as the economy is falling over the 10% unemployment cliff. So by contrast, I mean, he's not exactly slapping us around like we were being battered before. So it feels good. It feels good because we're just not getting slammed anymore,
right,
by our own leaders. However, doing nothing, which is literally what's happening, which is that we wrote the checks to the bank and now we're declaring that the bank crisis is over. I was deeply disappointed by his statement opening up on health care. Like, well, I took care of the economy, now we can move on to health care. The hell you have, buddy.
Yep. The hell you have.
You know, there's still a mess all over the floor.
And we're cleaning it up. Greg Palast will be on duty for quite some time, I suspect. Thank you, my friend, author of Our Madhouse and star of the new documentary video, Greg Palast Investigates. You can get more information. You can get links to that book at bradblog.com and go to gregpalast.com/bradblog to buy a copy of that Greg Palast Investigates video. It helps him, it helps me, and it will help you. Thank you, Greg.
Got you, brother. Bye.
Have a good weekend. All right. Brad in for Malloy. Well, we're going to continue with your calls. Desi Doyen comes at the top of the hour with some green news. Give us a call, 877-520-1150. Accountability Friday with Brad on The Malloy Show. Show Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Stop by bradblog.com. Go visit Agent 99 in the open thread there. She's lonely. She would like to see you there. Happy birthday, Bill O'Reitz, man, over at DU. I'm keeping my eye on you peeps as well. 877-520-1150. There we go. You're invited to the Chevy open house. GM has made it easy to get into a new Chevy with low, straightforward pricing on remaining 08 and 09 models. It's simple. The price on the tag is the price you pay. What? Go to Chevy.com/openhouse for details. The price on the tag is the price you pay for a car? I don't believe it. Chevy.com/openhouse for details. Excludes Corvette ZR1 at participating dealers only. All right, accountability Friday. Let's bring it on. Steve in Palo Alto. Accountability for me? Oh, Steve? Did I lose him? Yeah, oh well. Let me try to get to Mark in San Francisco. Oh, Mark.
Yeah, it's Mark. How are you doing, Brad?
Good. I'm okay. How are you, sir?
Good. I love your show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's Mike Malloy's show.
I know, but you do a great job filling in. He made a good choice.
I appreciate that.
Anyway, I'm after Eric Holder. I mean, we had the worst criminal administration in our history, and there's not one charge has been filed against him. Not one.
Yep.
And you know what, Brad? What's happening is we're taking the debate away from the Democrats to try to get health care, and instead of the Republicans having to do damage control on the criminals, they're out to destroy our chances for good health care.
So you're saying that they don't have any accountability. They're not that they would be distracted by fighting off these torture probes and everything else if that was running at this
time.
That's
what I believe. I believe they'd have to do damage control because.
And would it make it harder then for the Democrats to actually get health care done?
Well, they're not getting any cooperation from the Republicans anyway.
I concur. You're right on the money. Smartly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What do we got to lose, Brad? I mean,
yep.
Why don't we just go ahead and do it with the right? It's the right thing to do.
Yep.
And let's get the debate changed instead of these birthers and all this.
Yeah.
Let's get our health care and let's go on with the agenda for the American people and let the Republicans do damage control on their criminals.
You make a good point. Put them on defense. Thanks, Mark. Smartly done. There's some accountability. Make them fight to protect Dick Cheney and George Bush for torture. So they don't have so much time to do so much damn damage on this healthcare stuff and everything else. Clay in Minneapolis. What's up, Clay?
Hey, I like the debate going on here. I just had a comment about the healthcare stuff.
What is it?
I find it interesting that they come out, especially every time nowadays you see they try to make a major change, isn't the bailout or some of the recent legislation passed. And I feel like, especially with the healthcare, there's something we need to be aware of a 1,000-page bill that no one's read going through the House that fast and making that law. I think it's something we need to think about, especially when there's other interests
in
that bill.
What do we need to think about, Clay?
we need to think about the insurance companies that are running the place and that have the lobbyists buying out our congresspeople. It's heartbreaking, but it's
You think
true.
They're going to be, Clay, do you think they're going to be less likely to buy out our congresspeople if we take longer to pass health care?
You know, no. I mean, I think there's definitely something that needs to be done, and I think it gets a bad rap, the free market solution, because people always say, well, you don't care about health. Well, it's just, I think everyone agrees we need health care reform. The question is how, and giving a monopoly to the government and saying it's illegal to have anyone else's health care isn't really
fair. Who said that, Clay?
Who said that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is a philosophy. A lot of people think this.
But that's not the bill.
Change.
That's not the policy. Are you watching Fox News, Clay?
Of course not. Of
it's
course
a public
not.
Option.
I've been a critic of George Bush.
Okay.
He helped dismantle our country. And that's another thing.
Clay, let me help you out. Let me help you out, Clay. If there is a public option in the health care bill that gets passed, that means you will have the option to get public insurance versus private insurance, which you can still continue to have. Where did you get the idea that there would be a monopoly, Clay? Where did you get the idea that there would be a monopoly, that the government would have a monopoly on health care?
That's what they say.
Who's they? Who's they, Clay?
This is just the taglines they use on TV. I mean,
don't listen to the taglines. It's BS, Clay. If you're worried about reading the bill, go read it.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I don't believe them.
Well, then don't. You say, why should we rush health care if you want the misinformation? If you want the misinformation to get still worse, Clay, then keep delaying on health care.
Just have an open mind to the intellectual debate, because I think it's something serious that's going to affect all of us.
It's damn
children.
Serious.
So,
don't.
I mean, I'm not like calling
okay.
on some,
right.
like I don't want health
yeah.
care. Everyone knows it needs to be reformed.
Okay.
It's just, how are we going to do it?
We're
know?
Going and to do it by fighting back at the BS and not falling for the crap you hear on Fox News that there's going to be a monopoly that the government is going to run. We'll be lucky if you get the government to work on this at all. You like your private insurance? These shysters, you like them? Keep them. Fox News. Brad in from Malloy, Desi Doyen coming up with green news and much more. And your call, stick on the line right after this. Blog.com, your friendly citizen, blogger, journalist, muckraker, troublemaker, drafted into duty, being the media, because someone's got to. On behalf of Mike Malloy, who is out sick, he's got a bug or something, we hope he'll be back by Monday. So don't lose heart. Hope you're feeling better out there, Mike. If you happen to be up late listening, you shouldn't. Go to bed. Everything's fine. All right, it's Accountability Friday. That's what I've decided, and we are taking your calls on accountability, 877-520-1150. Desi Doyen is going to be joining me in a bit with the Green News Report, but we'd love to hear from you, 877-520-1150. Who needs to be held accountable here? We've been holding the Republicans. We've been trying to hold the Republicans accountable for years, at least eight. Now you got the Democrats coming in. They're supposed to get the job done. They're supposed to bring accountability. They're supposed to hold these criminals and liars and thieves and torturers accountable. They ain't doing it. Eric Holder ain't doing it. Barack Obama ain't doing it. The Democrats ain't doing it. Now, if you don't believe in the rule of law, and yet you call yourself a conservative, I'd love to hear from you. 877-520-1150. Tell me how you justify not holding these guys accountable, not holding George Bush, Dick Cheney, John Yoo, Bibee, Rizzo, Gonzalez, Rove, all the rest. Tell me how you justify not holding them accountable. In the meantime, they're all lying to you. So we get a guy like Clay who called just before the break from Minneapolis. And I think Clay may have believed that nonsense. He may have believed that the health care reform they're talking about in Congress, which ain't that good, but it's something, it will change the system. But he may believe that the health care reform they're talking about is actually going to give the government a monopoly on health care, is going to put the private companies out of business. Last night we had somebody who called in and said that, doctors are going to leave the industry. Really? Are they? Doctors are going to leave the industry? What, are they going to become garbage men instead? Oh, there's no incentive here anymore. What are you talking about, people? You've got to, when you watch, and it's not just Fox News, when you watch Fox, CNN, when you listen to the liars like Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, you've got to know that they're not telling you the truth. The facts are out there. Go find them. When you hear this crazy nutball, Republican Michelle Bachmann from Minnesota, saying that, quote, the Democrat way is not reforming healthcare, it's destroying it. Yes, that's what the Democrats are trying to do. They're trying to destroy healthcare. They want to kill people. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? People, you don't buy this crap, do you? Apparently, some do. No, it's not going to be a government monopoly on health care. You want to stick with your private health insurance? The guys who are screwing you right now, frankly, but you want to stick with them? Stick with them. You want to go to a government service? And don't tell me the government can't run anything. Oh, you got some wing nuts out there who want to tell me the government can't run anything? Because we had a caller at the end of the night last night who was trying to say, oh, you don't want the government running health care. They can't run anything. Really? How'd they do in World War II? How are they doing out there in Afghanistan and Iraq? Do you like what they're doing, or you hate what they're doing? Do you hate the troops? Because when you say government can't do anything, you know, the biggest sector of this economy is defense. Now, you can't have it both ways. If you hate the government, then that means you hate the military, because the government runs the military. Anyway, Michelle Bachmann saying that the Democrat way is not reforming health care. It's Democratic, Michelle. Democrat way is not reforming health care. It's destroying it. But she's not the only one. You got this nutball wing nut from North Carolina, Republican Virginia Fox, who says there are no Americans who don't have health care. Here is what she said today as several female Republican House members held a press conference to attack Obama pushing for health insurance reform.
President put out a lot of facts the other day, or put out a lot of numbers that he purports to be facts. They are not facts. We do not have 47 million Americans who don't have health care.
We don't?
There are no Americans who don't have health care.
Really?
Everybody in this country has access to health care. We do have about 7.5 million Americans who want to purchase health insurance who cannot afford it. We do not need a plan that destroys what is good about health care in this country to give the government control of our lives.
What is it destroying, Virginia Fox, Republican from North Carolina? What is the Obama health care plan destroying about health care in this country? If you have a plan, you can stay with it. If you want it, you can keep it. What the hell are you talking about, lady? There are no Americans who don't have health care? Tony, you got health care? You ain't got health care. You got a job. You're a responsible person. You ain't got health care. Too damn expensive. Everybody in this country has access to health care. I guess she's saying that you can go to the emergency room if you want to. Great. As soon as your cancer gets so damn bad that you collapse, that you have to go into the emergency room, yeah, they'll probably treat you. And by then, I just have a feeling it may be too late. But what do I know? I hate America or something like that. Should I be clear that that was satire? That I don't hate America? Do people get... if they don't get... Even if I tell them, they're going to... Steve in Palo Alto. What's up, Steve?
Hey, man. Am I online?
You am online.
Oh, great. Okay, I want to give props to you, man. I've been following you for years, and it's a delight to speak with you. And Greg, in passing, you know, said, those who make money make more money.
Yep.
Structural oppression of capitalism is a commodification of commercialization of human flesh.
Woo! I didn't understand that at all, Steve.
It doesn't allow us to have progressive policies to aid workers.
Yeah.
This reason is why the banks were bailed.
Why were they bailed?
They were bailed because the state needs money from the capitalists in order to aid workers, because that's the only restriction on capitalism.
Okay.
And capitalism will move other places.
Okay.
So, yes, the economy would collapse more without the banks being bailed.
Yeah.
And we got to watch for a deeper bailing.
So we should you're in favor of bailing
later.
You're in favor of bailing out the banks, is that right?
No, I'm talking about bailing out the boat.
Oh, bailing from the banks. All right. I hear you.
We the people don't have an alternative economy.
All right.
And what's going to happen when we pull in our pocket and pull out this paper and
yeah, we're screwed. Thanks, Steve, and I appreciate it. I think
the wealth
we're
is
losing.
Made they are the decision makers. The decision makers, so we're yeah.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that. Your phone's breaking up a little bit, but I do appreciate the call and the thoughts. Let me go to Bill in Los Angeles. Hey, Bill, what's up? Oh, Bill in Los Angeles. What happened to you, Bill? See you later. Sorry. Let's try Michael in Los Angeles. Oh, Michael.
Hi,
welcome
can
to
you
the
hear me?
I can. Welcome to the Molloy Show. What's up, sir?
Hi. Just a couple of points. They say 20% of the GDP is already going for healthcare related, directly or indirectly, but over 20% of earned income by those who are paying their premiums is just the average. So people with pre-existing conditions or catastrophic illnesses, of their earned income, it may go up as much as 50% or more. And yet, Republicans say, well, they're happy, paying half their income for health insurance, but they don't complain about it like they would paying half their income for taxes, because they get the write-offs, the tax credits, the deductions.
Well, but they don't pay half their income. Come on, health insurance. They pay a tiny bit. If you got a lot of money, health care ain't all that expensive.
Well, if you're somebody making, say, anywhere from $70,000 to $125,000 a year, depending on what your individual business or what, even if you're a government employee,
right.
The numbers are up, well over 20%, depending on your conditions. Now, these people don't have the write-offs that they do, but not only those that are making good money paying their, these high premiums, they get the write-offs, so they get their health insurance, and then they avoid paying their taxes for the other government services. And finally, I was going to make the point that when it comes to the health insurance debate in Washington, I don't think that they're putting this off because blue dogs or this or that. It's so much a part of the economy, and they're afraid to commit to any kind of health and reform program that covers more people, single payer, public option, you name it. I don't think they're going to do anything until they figure out where this economy is going, because they don't want to make a commitment to this and have this recession deepen, which is what I think is going to happen.
Democrats, scaredy cats, you don't say. Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
I appreciate the call. Let me get to Lance in, there we go, Lance in Newark, New Jersey. What's up, Lance?
Brad, how are you? Enjoying your show tonight.
I appreciate
Enjoying
that.
Enjoying your show.
Thanks, sir.
You talked about who should be held accountable.
Yep.
And a couple calls ago talked about, the Republicans, that they're being held accountable for the CIA thing. I wanted to deal with healthcare, since that's the topic du jour.
All right, deal with it. What you got?
I believe these blue dog Democrats are stalling healthcare for whatever reason. I haven't figured that out yet, but let's look at something. If you notice, the Republicans never, ever publicly go against a Republican president while he's in office.
Right.
They stand behind them. Why can't the Democrats all Democrats
yeah.
get behind a Democratic president with a democratically controlled House and a democratically controlled Senate. We have these blue dog Democrats who are holding...
Lance, let me answer that question because I got to get to a break here. Okay. But the fact is, I don't want to see a Democratic Party that supports a Democratic president without question doing what the Republicans did. But on the other hand, if they have a legitimate problem, bring it on. The Blue Dogs don't have a legitimate problem. Their only problem is that they're in the pocket of the health care companies and the banks Absolutely. And the energy companies who have paid more than 54% of the money that comes into those Blue Dogs comes from those companies. They're fighting for the companies, not for the people, Lance. I got to get to a break. I do appreciate the call, though, my friend. Thank you, sir. All right. More accountability on Accountability Friday right here on the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. The lovely Desi Doyen is coming up soon. Stay with us. Accountability Friday, cause I says so. Who you want to hold accountable? Let us know. Let me know. You can hold me accountable if you want. I'm still waiting for those wing nuts to call in. Why don't they hold me accountable? Why don't they tell me how I'm wrong? Why don't they tell me how torture is a good thing? We never hear from them. Let's see. Sean in Vancouver, Washington. Welcome to the Malloy Show. What's up, Sean?
Brad, I think it's a tie. I think it's a tie for accountability. It has to go to, number one, McCarthyism. The free marketeers were afraid to compete in an open marketplace of ideas.
So yeah,
they had to destroy the left in the 1950s. And then tied with them...
And they're still afraid to compete. That's why they don't want the public option for health care, because God forbid they should have to compete.
God forbid single-payer or socialized medicine. But the tie has to go also with academia, specifically the University of Chicago Economics Department. I used to believe that, you know, these were human beings who just had a different opinion from me and that we could use logic and reason to debate them. But they completely contradicted years and decades of scholarship last September by bailing out Wall Street. You know, every time we heard, you know, factories closing and unions being destroyed, they always said, oh, market forces, market forces.
University of Chicago School of Economics didn't do that, did they?
Well, unfortunately, they provided academic cover for corporate America, for Wall Street, by saying that deregulation and lowering taxes and busting unions was the natural and right way to go. So it was always their ideas were always trumped up whenever something negative would happen to the working class.
They would point to the University of Chicago and say, well, this fine academic institution believes it, so it didn't.
Sure,
must be right.
Milton Friedman, yeah. You know, the gaggle. Yeah. I mean, yeah. These are not people that we just disagree with. These are quite literally a parasitic class who will think nothing about destroying the American people. And they don't just disagree with us. They're predators. People have to get it in their mind that the Wall Street capitalists have captured both the Republican and Democratic parties. And is it just me, or is it since the disappearance of the Soviet Union in the early 90s, we've seen just rollback after rollback of all the gains that regular people made?
Well, I don't think it has to do with that as much as it has to do with Ronald Reagan.
Martin Luther King, Gandhi, the union movement, all of them had in the background the power of the Soviet Union. The capitalists were worried that ordinary people were going to start siding with them, and so they made concessions to unions, to MLK, to Gandhi.
All right. Well, fair enough. I think it was just Reagan and the undoing of America that he began.
They certainly carried it out with the help of Milton Friedman and the University of Chicago.
I hear you. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate
Thanks,
the call.
Bye.
All right. Let me get to, do I have time to go to Fred? No. Come on, Fred. Fred can do it in 30 seconds. What do you got in 30 seconds, Fred? Oh, Fred in Concord, New Hampshire. What do you got? 30 seconds.
Hey, Brad. It's first of all, thank you for allowing me to vent here. It's
yeah, but you only got 30 seconds. You already used 10 of them. Go.
All right, I'm gonna go. You know what? Things are too far gone. I listened to Fox News today. I almost kicked in the TV. My dream is to someday meet Rush Limbaugh or Hannity, and just beat the crap out of them for being traitors. We need a revolution in this country. Things are so far gone. Obama's not going to do anything because these Republicans are masters at manipulation.
All right, we may need a... I'm sorry, I got to go do a break. We may need a revolution, but no vigilante justice. You got that? Let's hold them accountable using the rule of law. Desi Doyen back with us after this. Brad on the Malloy Show. If you're on the phone, stay there. We'll try to get to everybody.
San Quentin, I hate every inch of you. You cut me and you scarred me through and through. And
it seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things. And people tend to pass you over because you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water. Stars in the sky.
Welcome back to the Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Mike will be back with us, I hope, next Monday. And we will, if you're on the line, stay there. We'll try to get to everyone's calls here. 877-520-1150 on Accountability Friday. First, we're going to go to the Green News Report, however, and if you don't get the Green News Report at your radio station, wherever you may be listening in tonight, please call your station. Tell them you want the Green News Report. It's hosted by my lovely co-host and managing editor and producer of tonight's program, Desi Doyen. Hey, Des.
Hey.
Still letting people know. They can get their Green News Report if only they call their station and ask for it. We do it a couple times a week. It's about 6 minutes, and it's lovely and delightful. And let's play last night's version, and then we'll come back and talk about it for a few minutes with Desi before returning to your calls. Of course, if you have a call for Desi, 877-520-1150 on Green Things. Bring it on.
Sure, we'll give it a try.
Okay. All right. Bring it on. The Green News Report from last night. And then we got, you got an update for us, right?
Yes.
All right. Bring it on. Oh, Tony. See? I'm always the one who's late. Now you...
An AI shrunk the fish. Offshore drilling versus California's budget. Clean coal versus reality. Plus...
I just found out that a girl got killed here last week. And you knew it. You knew it was dangerous. But you swim anyway.
Tourism versus safety.
You yell barracuda. Everybody says, huh? What? You yell shark.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, this is your Green News Report.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Okay, I can't wait to get to the scary part. Is that first or is that last?
That's last.
They'll have to hang on. Just go in the green headline.
Fish are shrinking, according to a new study published in the Journal of the National Academy of Sciences. And scientists are blaming overfishing and global warming. Researchers found that the average body mass of individual species has dropped 50% over the last 30 years, with a drop of 60% in the average of all species.
50%
yes.
Drop over the last 30 years?
Yes. That's they were studying fish specifically in the North Sea, north of England, and they said that global warming, the warming of the ocean temperatures, is affecting the body mass of fish.
Wow, incredible.
The findings underscore several earlier studies that show many species of fish have changed their habitat ranges and breeding patterns as the ocean warms, and the decline in body mass, they say, has serious implications for the fish's fertility and for the food chain.
Holy cow.
California's budget woes have led to a deal for more offshore drilling. According to the LA Times, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger revived a plan that had been rejected by the State Lands Commission over a year ago, leading to allegations of opportunistically using the budget crisis to end the ban on offshore for drilling instead of looking at other options, like, for example, charging an extraction fee like other states do, which California does not.
Wait, so we charge no royalties for this offshore drilling?
We get some royalties, but apparently there's also an extraction fee that some states charge that California does not charge that would have brought in additional revenue estimated to be up to $1 billion a year.
But now, that would be new taxes on oil companies. We wouldn't want to do that.
If the deal does go through, it would be the first new drilling off the coast of California since 1969, when a massive oil spill off Santa Barbara galvanized the environmental movement in the United States. Now, we've heard plenty about the concept of clean coal recently, and now a new study from Harvard, for the first time, calculates the road to widespread use of clean coal technology. They say it will take billions in funding and is still many years away. Now, first, some background. There is no such thing as, quote, clean coal. Coal is a fossil fuel with toxic waste byproducts that come when it is burned. Clean coal is a really vague term that these days generally refers to the concept of carbon dioxide capture and sequestration, where carbon dioxide from coal burning is literally captured and buried underground. No one has yet figured out how to do that on a large economic scale. So this new study out of Harvard, called The Realistic Costs of Carbon Capture, examined the economics of developing carbon capture and sequestration technology, and they say that even with billions in funding, it is still 10 to 15 years away, and in the meantime would double electricity rates until the technology is mature. It's a fascinating study. People should check it out online so they can be fully informed about this idea. We have it all at greennews.bradblog.com.
So during the campaign last year, when Barack Obama actually talked about being in favor of clean coal, and that was a clip that they used over and over again, the coal industry uses still in advertisements. It's all nonsense. It doesn't exist at this
time. It does not yet exist. Now, there are small facilities that have been able to use geologic formations to pump the carbon dioxide into them, but as yet, no one has figured out how to do it on a large scale that's not super expensive. One of the largest onion producers in the nation this week unveiled a new power source, onion juice. Gill Onions in Southern California supplies pre-cut onions to grocery stores and restaurants, and instead of disposing of their leftovers from the processing, the onion waste is dumped into an anaerobic digester in which microbes produce methane, which in turn generates electricity. Now, the company says this is a closed-loop cycle that will save them over $1 million a year on electricity and waste disposal bills.
That's cool. So they're doing it for their own plant. It's not something that's yet widespread, the use of these onions.
Other growers are looking at this as a way to save on electricity and to save on their waste disposal costs.
Very cool.
Environmental officials in the state of Missouri are in hot water after it was revealed that they withheld results showing elevated levels of dangerous E. coli bacteria at the very popular Lake of the Ozarks during the busy Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, see, this one hits me where I live. I grew up in Missouri. I grew up going out to the Lake of the Ozarks every summer, and this one really ticks me off. They found E. coli out there, but they didn't tell anyone?
They did not. In an interview with the Kansas City Star, the spokesperson for the Missouri Department of Natural Resources said, quote, business and tourism was a consideration. We didn't want to panic the people. Now, the report was withheld until after both the Memorial Day and July 4th holiday weekends, even after residents demanded to see the report. Now, the Missouri Attorney General is investigating because it violates the Missouri Sunshine Law, which means that once the public demands info, it must be released.
And so they knew about this before Memorial Day. They knew about it before 4th of July. This is a huge lake. For folks who don't know, a huge lake, a huge amount of tourism, boats, water skis, swimming, everything else out there. The fact that they knew about this, that they withheld this information because of the holidays, that's why we played the Jaws stuff at the beginning. That's exactly what happened in Jaws. Of course, in this case, it wasn't a shark in the water. It was something perhaps more reminiscent of a scene from Caddyshack, if you want to think about that one. But incredible that they did not let the people know about it. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Oh, and this has been your Green News Report. And it's still your Green News Report. Brad Friedman still here with Desi. That was last night's Green News Report, and we do have an update on the California story.
Yeah.
The oil drilling that was going to be allowed offshore here in California.
Yes,
part of the
that
budget.
Has now been stripped from the budget deal for California after a 20-hour session, apparently. At the last minute, the Assembly, the lower house of the California State Legislature,
right,
did vote down the bill. I think it was maybe 13 votes. Was the margin?
But they got it out of there.
They got it out of there, yes.
And they're still, but I thought this was a deal. I thought they had their budget deal. This is it.
That was the deal that was reached with negotiators in the legislature. So then they still had to vote on it to get it out of both houses. The Senate passed it. The lower assembly did not. And now the governor, it goes back to the governor to sign. And, you know, they're saying that the royalties that would have been expected from expanding offshore drilling at this one platform off of Santa Barbara would have brought in about $100 million, when in reality they have a $1 billion shortfall now, that between the deal that was signed with that the governor came to with the negotiators, now they still have $1 billion because the assembly cut $1 billion of stuff.
And tell me about that in 1969, the spill? This is the spill that scared
galvanized,
everybody about.
That scared all of America. I mean, even President Nixon, he was a Republican, remember? He came out and he said, you know, it's really sad that this had to happen to Santa Barbara, that Santa Barbara had to be essentially, he didn't say this exactly, but essentially sacrificed so that the American people could see how important it is for us to save our natural resources for the future.
Because Republicans used to be environmentalists.
They used to want to conserve
Conservatism. Exactly. Teddy Roosevelt set up the national jewel of the national park system.
Yes. Yes, they
did. All right. And, okay, real quick before I let you go, Bill Sack, there was some testimony.
I didn't bring the notes in for that.
That's not what you wanted to talk about?
That's not
what did you want to talk about?
Well, I wanted to talk about something cool that I thought the military is doing. The Army has launched a pilot program to determine ways to reduce their energy consumption and emission. Now, they're starting this on 11.
Because the Army, the military, is the largest
consumer of energy in the United States.
In the world.
In the world.
That's what I understand.
Well, I understood it to be the nation.
Of course,
I can't verify that it's the world. You could be.
If I was making it up, however, I'd be working for Fox News.
Oh, so anyway, they had one pilot program that was created by this one company that actually went to, I forget which one it is, but they went to one of the bases. They did an entire carbon footprint examination of one of these Army bases, and they said, okay, look, this is what we figured out. This is what your carbon footprint is. These are what your emissions are. This is how much energy you're using. This is where you can save. And now they're expanding that to 11 Army bases, and they're going to then create a sort of a framework, a blueprint that can then be expanded to the rest of the Army and hopefully from there to the rest of the military.
And so they did find substantial cuts?
They did find things. And they said, you know, there's one thing like, you know, there's a base in Georgia where it's surrounded by forests. And they said, well, look, if you plant more trees around your base, then you can get carbon credits. And you can actually become like a carbon sequestration place. And so the Army could actually help to fight climate change by increasing the sequestration that you can get out of
Bellevue. So the military either gives a damn or is willing to act like they give a damn at this point.
They actually do give a damn because, as they've said in their prior security warnings, they've actually done studies on this stuff that say this is going to be a national security issue for everybody. We need to get on this now.
Why does the Army hate America? Thanks, Desi. Doing a good job. We're going to have to wait till next week's Green News Report to hear about the Vilsack thing.
Yes, we will.
All right. Well, we teased it. And you want to get more, go to greennews.bradblog.com, where you can hear all of the Green News reports. And as I say, call your radio station. It's free to them. All they got to do is tell us they want it. They can send us email, as can you, at greennews@bradblog.com. All right. We got a few more accountability calls left. I know a lot of you have been hanging a long time. Got to do my best to get to everyone. Brad, in for Malloy. One more segment. Stay put. Show Brad in for Malloy for just a few more minutes here. We'll try to get in your calls, 877-520-1150. We hope Mike will be back on Monday. Mike and Kathy, hope they're doing well out there, but happy to sit in for them in the meantime. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 miles on a tank. The most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. But it sounds good to me. I need a road trip. Hey, Chevy, loan me one of those Equinoxes. I'll give it a good test drive. All right, let's see if we can clear the board before we go here. Mike from Lorain, Ohio. What's up, Mike?
Hi, Brad. How you doing, sir?
I'm okay. It's Accountability Friday, so what could go
all
wrong?
All right. I got a question.
Yes, sir.
A friend of mine who was a Republican, unfortunately, said that the death and dying language that's contained in a new health bill doesn't cover, he said that seniors who are diagnosed with illnesses that are terminal will not have their health care coverage covered, and all they're going to do is cover the medication until their demise.
Okay, fair enough. He's so smart. Just ask him to show you that where that is in the bill, and not where it is that Glenn Beck said that was going to happen, or Rush Limbaugh, or Bill O'Reilly, but where that actually is in the bill. Do you know what I'm saying?
I understand that. He won't tell me his source, and he got mad and hung up on me, so that was the last time I spoke with him. So I was trying to get information from you guys here. I like Mike Malloy. I listen to you when I'm out in Los Angeles.
I appreciate that, Mike. I am not familiar with that. They're just gonna Soylent Green is people. I don't think that's part of the plan, Mike.
All right, very good. I didn't think that's kind of unconscionable to me.
Yeah, remember, most of these guys are liars. So if they can't prove what they're saying, then, you know, don't believe them. Just say, okay, oh, great, I hadn't heard that. Show me the text of that bill. And, of course, they won't be able to, and they'll hang up on you as your friend did.
Well, I told him, let's just agree to disagree, and I let it go at that. So.
Yeah, Desi types me a note here saying, what? No one missed that in the bill? Rush didn't notice it? He forgot to mention? I'm sure he'll be making it up on Monday. Thanks, Mike, for the call.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Bye. All right, let's go to, where are we here? Robert in San Francisco. We got just a few minutes. What's up, Robert?
Hi, Brad. I really love your style.
Appreciate it.
While the cat's away, the mice must play. You know, this whole story about health care insurance, it's not health care insurance we need. It's health care. And that's what people need to focus on. It's the delivery system. Let's cut the fat out of this and really help this recession go away quickly by cutting costs. And I wanted to mention something about the Open Chemical Physics Journal, April 2009, at bentham.org.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Dr. Jeffrey Farr and Niles Herit have done an 18-month study, and they've conclusively proved from four different samples weaponized nanothermite pulled from the pulverized concrete of the World Trade Complex dust. So now we have 14 conditions of a controlled demolition plus U.S. weaponized nanothermite, active weaponized nanothermite in the dust. It is conclusive. Those towers were blown up. They wanted no investigation. They wanted 9/11 to happen so they could put their Project for New American Century in place. And we need an investigation. You talk about accountability. This will change the country.
All right. Well, there's one there is getting on the ballot in New York City, so maybe you will get it. Nice use of the airways, Robert. Have a great weekend.
I love you.
All right. Let's see. Oh, well, Clay is calling back from Minneapolis. All right. We got only a minute here, Clay.
What's up? I have a great comment, Brad. You made a brilliant point.
I did?
You said people that call themselves conservatives, if they're so distrustful of government, they should be anti-war. And that's what everyone should be today, I feel like, because this is no longer Bush's war. This stuff is going on now. People are still getting killed in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
We got to stand up, and we got to put the pressure on the politicians to end this immediately, not in 6 months, but today, you know? This is serious.
Clay,
this has got to end.
Who did you vote for, by the way, for president?
I voted for Ron Paul.
For Ron Paul?
Yes, sir.
And he's a doctor. Now, he didn't tell you earlier, you had said that, what did you say, that there was going to be a government monopoly on health care. I'm worried about that.
That's probably not the best choice of words.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing where I'm at with the war.
Uh-huh.
It's growing up, I'm in my early 20s, growing up, being involved in this security state, everything that's going on with the wars, I can tell who's running it, and it's the corporations. That's the only thing I worry about, and that I have. I'm willing to make concessions if it's for it, but if we're going to fund that, we might as well end our military presence abroad, because it's not making things any better, and it's not going to help our health by any means.
Thanks for the call, Clay. Sneaking in again.
Thank
Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
You too.
All right. Well, Accountability Friday comes to a close, but tomorrow, don't forget, is Accountability Saturday, followed by Accountability Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and once again, Accountability Friday next Friday. It's time for accountability, whether it's a Republican, whether it's a Democrat, whether it's a corporation, whether it's the media, the people who are ill-serving this country, who are breaking the laws, who are not following the Constitution, call them out. And if it's progressives, so-called progressives, folks on the left, folks like me who aren't doing the deal, call them out. That's all I ask. Hold feet to the fire. I promise you the bad guys are calling in to D.C. and making their voices heard. You can do the same. Make your voice heard. Call D.C. Call your congressman. Call the radio stations. Call Rush Limbaugh. Don't let him get away with this crap. My thanks to engineer Tony Sorrentino, Desi Doyen, both producing and screening calls today, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, Agent 99 at TheBradBlog.com chat room, K-Talk AM 1150 for allowing me into Stephanie Miller's chair to bring you the Mike Malloy Show, and of course to Mike and Kathy Malloy. Feel better, Mike. We need you back here on Monday. For those listening on the MikeMalloy.com stream, stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid. I've had a great time being here. Thanks for having me, guys, and have a great weekend. Keep it lit.